Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. It's the Beer Show on this Food Friday, and we have a great panel in the studio with us. George DePiro is the co-owner and master brewer at Druthers in Saratoga Springs, New York. Roger Savoy is owner of Homebrew Emporium in, about 18 million places. Rensselaer, New Rochelle, New York, Cambridge, West Boylston, South Weymouth, Mass. Any other places coming up? We'll find out in a moment. Paul McElhane is a master brewer, formerly at Old Saratoga. Now, I urge you to call early with your beer questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment on our wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Feel free to tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or even email voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Nice to have you all back here in the Oktoberfest sort of spirit.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Isn't Oktoberfest in Germany in September?
Yes.
Yes, it starts.
So it's a little outdated already.
Yeah. Well, here in the States, we're always a little slow. And you see some beer here. What do we bring? George, you start.
Okay. Let's see. Since you wanted to do a German theme,
yes.
My Oktoberfest lager, while delicious, is sadly gone already.
Well, that's poor planning on your part.
Well, two full batches went in like 3 weeks.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it was popular. But all I brought right. another German-style beer, a smoked Hefeweizen.
Oh, love it.
And Hefeweizen is fairly commonly seen now, but smoked versions are not. So this is made with beechwood smoked malt to give it what is hopefully a subtle smoke character.
Okay. Now, I know that there are some German smoky Hefeweizens, but do they violate the purity law of 1516?
No, because it's made with malt.
And so it's just the smoking of the malt?
Yep. As long as it's malt, you can smoke it.
When that law was enacted, everything was smoked.
Okay.
Because that's the only way you could dry your malt.
I see. All right. So we're going to try this already? Wow, it's early in the program. Okay.
Didn't somebody tell me to? I was just following directions.
I just said, what did you bring? I didn't say break it out, but by golly, here we are.
I missed the memo about the German theme, too. I didn't know that was the
Oktoberfest.
Well, it said Oktoberfest on the email.
Does it really matter? We're all here. All right, let's try this, George. This is the smoked Hefeweizen. Here we go.
And you'll notice it's got kind of a vanilla and clove and banana character.
Yeah.
That comes from the yeast. It's Bavarian-style wheat beers are made with a special yeast strain that make the same chemicals that are found in bananas and cloves.
Oh, interesting.
So the beer tastes like bananas and cloves.
So in the old days, when I drank a lot of beer, as opposed to nowadays, we would drink this in a big, tall glass and traditionally a lemon in there. Is that still how?
The lemon, no.
No?
But the big, tall glass, yes. The lemon, I've been all over Germany and all different kinds of bars and have not seen lemons.
I did get a lemon once when I was in Trier.
That's in Austria, the filtered version of
Southern Germany.
It can be served with lemon. If you went to any brew pub in Bavaria,
they would laugh at you.
And not only would they laugh at you, the service standards at brew pubs in Germany are not what we're used to. They might not give you anything.
Really?
Really, yeah.
Not even a beer?
Not even a beer.
Wow.
That's sad.
I was at a brew pub in Dusseldorf.
I was going to say I've never been to Germany, but if I can't get a beer.
A group of people sat down.
Just don't ask for
and
a lemon.
The waiters at this brew pub in Dusseldorf just walk around with a tray of beer because they only serve two kinds and they really push the one.
Yeah.
And they typically just put it in front of you and put a check mark on your coaster until you say nein. I understood enough German at the time to know that three of the people at the table ordered different drinks. They wanted coffee. Somebody else wanted soda. And the guy just scowled at them and put beers in front of every one of them
it.
And walked away.
That's
how you increase beer sales at your restaurant, right?
Do you do that?
I should.
At Druthers? Maybe you should try that. 1-800-348.
Practice scowling.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Warren in Manhattan. Warren, you're up.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Happy belated Oktoberfest.
Okay.
I wanted to know, obviously, chemist turned brewer George DePiro there, but anybody there as well. My question is, many brewers and homebrewers focus on malt, hops, yeast, and added ingredients like spices, fruits, adjuncts, wood aging now. but they don't pay proper attention to the water. So my question is, how important is the source water profile and salt additions to your beers? And do you think a mash chemistry or brewing water calculator to adjust the water to the proper sulfites might bring out the hops and residual alkalinity to maintain an appropriate style of malt flavor? I know that's a tongue twister.
Wow, you want to repeat that?
Everything after my name, but you got George there, so George knows my name.
Water chemistry is boring to most people.
But not to you.
To me a little bit.
It's boring to us all, but you have to cope with it.
Yeah, and water chemistry is, of course, important to the beer. In the old days, before they understood water chemistry, they brewed what would work. Mm-hmm. And they learned that by trial and error. So if you overlaid a map of Europe with a sheet that had the beer styles that are native to different areas, yeah, and then the water chemistries, particularly the residual alkalinity in the water, you'll see that darker, low hop beers are made in places with water with high residual alkalinity.
Oh, interesting.
And paler, high hop beers are made in places with low residual alkalinity. And until we learned how to control residual alkalinity in the water, that was really, really key, because you could make an alcoholic beverage, but it wouldn't taste top notch if you ignored the whims of the water. So what I have to do in Saratoga, where the water has a lot of residual alkalinity, is I use something called acidulated malt. It's a natural product from Germany where the malt is allowed to ferment a little bit with lactic acid bacteria. And if you add a little bit of that to your mash, it lowers the pH and makes everything good. Here in Albany, where we're building our second brewery, the water is really low in residual alkalinity, so you don't have to do anything like that. But you could, as Warren was suggesting, you could add sulfates to the water to help alter the hop character of a beer.
But you wouldn't want to do that if you were following the German purity laws, right?
Right. Yeah, you couldn't do.
That you couldn't do, and that's an additional reason for the acidulated malt, is that's how the Germans got around that.
Ah.
In order to acidify their mashes, they basically let the bacteria that's naturally occurring on the malt acidify it for them.
Wow.
And then they could use it.
Do you think enough people pay attention to water, though, in brewing, or no?
That's a great question. I was going to ask Roger that exactly. People who brew at home, should they be more cognizant of the water?
Well, for the most part, it's a lot of it. You know, actually, I don't have any sound.
Oh, good. Well,
a lot of it is. All of a sudden,
we're halfway through the show, Roger.
Right.
But well done.
You can still talk, though, right?
Okay. For most people, the water around here is fine for pretty much anything you want to use for home brewing. So for most people, it's not an issue.
Yeah.
We have great water here. You can make anything.
Okay.
And a lot of people, home brewers, a considerable percentage of them are extract brewers, and that really, there's no... all of the chemistry stuff has been done that needs to have that. Chemistry, water chemistry, so you don't need it.
But if what George says is true, and thank you for the call, Warren, if what George says is true, that he has to compensate for the water in Saratoga where he brews, then...
He made that up.
But if the chemistry is done for you in, say, a kit, say, from Hennessy, how can you know that that kit is going to act properly given a local water, say, in a far-flung region?
It has to do with mashing.
Right.
What I'm adjusting for is the acidity of the mash.
The mash.
If you're an extract brewer, what you're caring about mostly would be the sulfate content in the water. If you wanted to do, as Warren was suggesting, just the sulfates to alter the hop character,
right,
it's not a matter of good or bad. It's just different if you have higher sulfate. Then an extract home brewer could add some sulfate salts to the water to increase that, but it's critical before you go adding any salt to your water
to know what you got,
to know how much is in the water already. And that's why I started pouring this next beer.
Okay.
This is a Goza. It's a German style
sour
wheat beer.
We've had this before, and it's delicious.
And it won a gold medal at the World Beer Cup this year.
Okay.
So other people think it's good too. And I add some salt to it, sodium chloride, and I'm careful. I don't want it to taste super salty. I want the salt to just balance the sourness. So the salt is enhancing the sweetness of the malt and thus balancing the sourness a little bit. So how do I not cross that line and make it taste salty? Well, I know what the flavor threshold of sodium is. I know how much sodium is in the Saratoga water, and then I use that very expensive chemistry degree I got and calculate how much salt I need to add to my water to bring it just above flavor threshold.
Still, I would imagine there was some trial and error involved.
No.
No, you got it right
The first time.
Wow,
yeah.
It's right the first time.
Chemistry, science is like that. It's incredible.
Yeah. They never make mistakes. Mm, this is good.
The other interesting thing that I've always found about beers that are tart is that, you know, beers that are acidic taste kind of salty anyway.
Yes.
But if you taste vinegar, for instance, it has a salty taste. And it's not because it has salt in it.
Right.
It's just a factor in the flavor profile.
Yeah.
One more thing about water before we move on.
To a break.
To a break.
Yeah.
Wow. Water took up the whole first third.
We don't really, as professional brewers, think too much about pH. We want to get the pH of the mash right. But as home brewers and as professional brewers, if your pH is high, and you're typically you're shooting for like 5.2, 5.4, somewhere in there. If your pH is high, you extract more bitterness from the hops as you boil.
Ah.
So the higher the pH is, the more bitterness you're going to get from your hop additions. So if your pH is way out of whack, you can wind up accidentally with a really bitter beer.
What if, I'll ask you this question after the break. It is break time. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Food Friday, beer. All right, more coming up.
Support for WMC comes from Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. around City Hall. Moving inside Proctor's on November 2nd, SchenectadyGreenMarket.org. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. The Meat Market, Great Barrington. Full-service butcher shop featuring locally grown pasture-raised meats. And Cafe, serving lunch Wednesday through Sunday, daily soups, hamburgers, and specials, themeatmarketgb.com. And Hudson Opera House, Hudson, New York, presenting The Movable Feast tomorrow at 6:30 p.m., hudsonoperahouse.org for tickets.
One 800 348 2551 is the number. It is Vox Pop. It is a Food Friday. We talk beer today with George DePiro, Roger Savoy, and Paul McElhane. We talked before the break. We've been talking a lot about water, and you said if the pH, Paul, is too high, it'll extract more bitterness from the hops.
Exactly.
What if you're making a low hop beer and the pH is high? Is that all right?
Well, you're going to get more than you think you're going to,
typically.
So if you're good about calculating your bitterness, and some people are and some people don't really care.
I've calculated my bitterness for quite some time.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to say anything, but
so that's
so yeah. I mean, you just want to make sure that your water's not out of whack, and it can be, especially around here if you're using water that's surface water.
Yeah.
Certain times of the year, the lakes turn over and the pH goes through the roof. Mm. I remember one day in Saratoga, we were monitoring the incoming pH. We got 8.8.
Wow.
pH of water is usually neutral at 7.
So that was very alkaline?
Very, very alkaline, very, you know, you're stirring up all the minerals in the ponds and lakes, and that just makes the water harder and more alkaline.
Yeah, well, one thing you want in your beer is a lot of pond scum, right?
Well, sure.
Yeah, delicious.
It's just extra flavor.
Speaking of that, what's this green stuff in the bag here, Roger? You brought a couple of bags of green things and a test tube beaker of something. What is this?
Beaker. Well, the test tube is a yeast. That is an Oktoberfest yeast. So this is a pure yeast strain that is with companies, White Labs. We also have other companies that have these.
What makes it an Oktoberfest yeast?
They have stolen it from some brewery in
borrowed, please.
Appropriated.
They might have bought it from a bank.
Yeah.
They might have bought it.
Yeah.
Right. They have one of the largest banks, use banks in you can buy. They've got it from a German brewery, and that is used there.
And these are what the hops look like. These are the pellets.
Those are pellets.
You can get them straight up.
Pellets stay fresh a lot longer, so they're preferred.
They're also more compact, and they're easier to dispose of afterwards. They don't take as much room.
So they don't just dissolve?
No.
Those will fall apart when you throw them into the liquid.
They will strain them?
Just into little, like, dust-sized granules. And
yes.
You do this clever thing. If you're using them in the kettle at the end of the boil, you know if you stir a cup of tea that's got leaves in it, all the leaves will collect in the center?
Yeah.
People have known that forever, right? Well, it took brewers until something like 1968 to figure out they could do the same thing in the kettle and get the hop debris and the protein debris to settle in the center of the kettle.
Does stirring it vigorously affect the beer?
You don't aerate it. You just give it a couple of stirs with a paddle or with a pump to get it spinning slowly, and that's all it takes, just a little bit of a spin, 3 RPM, and 20 minutes of settling, and... Yeah. All the stuff will be at the bottom.
All right, let's go to the phones here, and I see Paul is preparing a beverage for us. Let's go to Richard in Springfield, Missouri. Springfield, Missouri, Richard, really?
How you doing?
You're up.
Yeah, I'm not Richard, though.
Oh, who are you?
My name is Jamal.
Okay.
How's you doing?
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to Henry in Cornwall. Henry.
Oh, yeah, hi. Great show. Last Christmas break, my wife and I visited Sonoma County and were visiting the wineries, and surprisingly came across, this was in Santa Rosa, California, in the county, Sonoma County, the Russian River Brewery, I think it was called.
Yeah.
It was
fabulous
a great place.
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry?
It's a fabulous place.
Yeah, well, you know what? They served, I think I told the call screener, bitter beer, but I think they call it sour beer.
Mm-hmm.
And they brewed it, and somehow the processing involved old wine casks, like Chardonnay and stuff like that. I was wondering if you ever heard of that. I actually couldn't drink it. It was that bitter, that sour.
Sour and bitter are not the same thing.
Sure.
I know, but I think now that I think about it, they call it sour beers. And I tried a tasting flight of it, and it really was sour.
It's probably a red.
Right. It could have been red. It could have been Chardonnay. They have a lot of barrels there. They have a fabulous brewery, and they do a lot of wood aging of beers and souring of beers. And I'm not sure everybody's process is a little proprietary. I don't know if the species of bacteria they're using are naturally occurring from the wine in the barrels or whether I suspect they're dosing it with a blend of bacteria and yeast.
No, it's not cheating
at all. It's okay. It's a good way to do that. And once you start on a program like that, you can, just keep that stuff going in the barrels for a long time and just use year after year. There's a fellow in Cambridge, Mass, Will Myers, who has who does a Solera aging. So he has some old beer, and he makes a beer every year and puts it in the barrels, and there's always some of the oldest beer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like making
port.
Only doing it with beer.
Yeah. Henry, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah. Other companies do that. Yeah, I mean, I know Stone had one of their Vertical Epic beers brewed in aged in a Shiraz barrel. So
I thought beer was done in a copper.
You can brew it in anything.
Stainless steel.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, what do we have here, Paul McErlane?
Well, what we have here is Troganator, which is a double bock.
You're speaking my language.
You know, it's a malty beer. It's in the same sort of spirit as an Oktoberfest, only it's richer, stronger, sweeter.
That's delicious.
More alcohol. And, it's a beer that I like, and I just got back from the Great American Beer Festival where I judged this category in the medal round, and it's always a fun category to judge and to drink.
It's got so much body.
It's got a very full body, rich malty character to it, not a lot of hops, just a little bit.
You finish this, you're not going to do that cord of wood tonight.
That's right. I'll so you got to take it easy there.
That'll be fun. All right, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Chris in Troy. Chris, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, so my question is regarding nitrates in beer. just reading so much research about how bad nitrates can be for you, and I'm wondering, how do I avoid them?
That's a good question.
Don't all jump at once.
Nitrate levels in beer vary, depending on the beer and the brewing process a little bit, and also on the source water to some extent.
Right.
There's no requirement currently for labeling of nitrates in beer. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes up.
I don't know any brewers that add nitrates to beer.
What would an advantage be of adding it?
There wouldn't be. Yeah. The source water, especially if it's contaminated, could have nitrates in it. Smoked malt might have some higher nitrosamine levels than unsmoked malts. But yeah, we don't add it to the beer. So the levels will generally not be a heck of a lot higher in most beers than the water it's made from. And there are standards in this country for how much can be in the water.
Is organic hops a difference? Do some of the nitrates come from fertilizer?
They can. And certainly if a beer is heavily dry hopped, you don't want to have fertilizer on the hops while you're processing.
Yeah, I mean, generally the plants aren't fertilized. The soil is fertilized.
The soil's fertilized.
So there shouldn't be fertilizer clinging to the hop flowers. They're growing 10 feet off the ground.
Or more.
What about pesticides?
They can be there.
There could be pesticides. A lot of hop farms have switched to using, a more organic way, but it may turn out to be a problem. Some of the fields are being hit with the Bacillus strain, which is supposed to be, a good pesticide in some instances, but it can cause issues later in the beer, it's turning out. So,
such as?
Bacteria. When you dry hop beer, whatever's on the hops gets in the beer. And for years, there were no known problem bacteria that could survive in beer. And, that's still true, but this particular Bacillus strain that they're using can survive in the beer, actually grow in the beer. And there haven't been any problems from it yet, but the jury's still out on that.
So just problems in taste or problems with people getting sick?
No. Problems with stability issues because it can grow.
Yeah,
and change the flavor.
Right, pathogens don't do well in beer. That's why beer has been the drink of choice for millennium.
Yeah,
because it's anaerobic. It's got a low pH. It's everything our bodies aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff that wants to live in us doesn't really do well in beer.
Yeah, I don't think.
But it can ruin the flavor. Absolutely.
It can.
Bacillus, but not nitrates.
Microbes, wild yeast, microbes of all kinds can grow in beer,
but
they won't hurt us. They'll just ruin the beer flavor.
Right.
And if you're really hard up, you drink it anyway, right?
I guess there's alcohol there. I think you drink it anyway.
Yeah.
People have drank some awfully.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. We talk beer today with Paul McErlane, Roger Savoy, and George DePiro. During the fun drive, one of the premiums we had was a book, A History of Albany Brewing, Albany Beer. And in the preface, they talked about the Dutch drinking habits, beer habits.
Greg Gravina's book?
Yes, I believe so.
We're going to have a signing of his book at my store in December.
Which store, Roger?
this one here in Rensselaer.
Okay.
Which store in the Empire?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very interesting book.
Yes.
And at the very beginning, they talk about the Dutch drinking habits. Mm-hmm. And, I'm half remembering here, but in the 1600s, the average Dutchman would drink 250 liters of beer a year. And we were marveling at that. And they said skilled workers would drink three times that.
Mm-hmm.
And we were marveling about that. But then we thought, the water quality wasn't all that up
to
scratch.
Exactly.
Beer was
exactly
a safer thing.
Right. If you drank water, you'd probably get sick. And so low alcohol beer was the normal thing to drink.
Yeah.
Even the children drank it. Because otherwise you were risking serious, maybe fatal illness. John Snow was an Englishman that started the field of epidemiology without knowing what he was getting into by finding out that during a cholera outbreak in London,
he plotted
out where everybody was sick and discovered that people that worked at the brewery didn't get cholera.
Ah.
And so the thinking at the time was that it was transmitted by the vapors in the air, when in fact it was transmitted by unsafe drinking water. And he figured that out, that the beer is safe to drink and the water isn't.
But so. he also spotted which wells were contaminated and stopped people from drinking there, and then things were stopped. The epidemic stopped.
Right.
I'm fascinated by this aspect of this Bacilli bacteria. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, and there's some thought that it could make some people ill. In the same way that some people with compromised immune systems
can get
sick from E. coli, for instance, much more easily than normal, healthy person would.
All right, so this is a rather new thing.
It's a very new thing.
Okay, so let me put it to you guys who are brewers. If, in fact, there was a genetically modified hop that was resistant to this sort of thing, would you be hip to brewing with it?
There's a lot of resistance in the industry to genetically modified organisms. I'm not sure how valid the concern is, but there's always some concern that something's gonna take a weird bounce and do something that you don't want.
It does seem almost every time, if not every time, man tries to interfere with nature, bad results happen.
Bad things happen or can happen.
Traditional breeding techniques do yield new crops that are more disease resistant. And that's why sometimes people get into these heritage crops, these heirloom crops.
Right. And they're heritage for a reason.
Right. Because they get wiped out by disease and take a ton of pesticide to be able to get to market. Newer crops are bred for disease resistance. And you might breed the best hop, best tasting hop on the planet. But if in its trial phases, when it gets purposely inoculated with diseases, it doesn't make it, it's never going to see the farmer's field. Mm-hmm. So modern hops do require less pesticide just based on that, because that's what we're aiming for. If we start inserting foreign genes into organisms, that's troubling on some levels, because we don't know where we're going with that.
And as far as this particular bacteria is concerned, it would only occur in dry hop beers, for instance.
Yeah, but we like anything, I like dry hop.
Anything that's been boiled, it's not going to survive that temperature.
Yeah,
and if it turns out to be an issue, which there's only a tiny, tiny little bit of concern that it might, then they'll stop using it for sure.
Well, I mean, you guys have spoken on previous shows, and by the way, the number to call here if you want to jump in is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You guys have mentioned on previous shows that there's a hop shortage, or some hops are hard to come by.
There are some specific varieties that are very hard to come by, and those varieties change from year to year. Mm-hmm. There are new hops coming out all the time that are the rage.
Yeah. Right.
Currently, things like Citra, Mosaic,
new stuff.
Calypso. You can still get Calypso a little bit, I think.
Yeah, you can get that. I'm just saying those are the new ones this year.
So you, as brewers, professional brewers, you have to put those orders in very early.
It's gotten to the point where you really have to contract years in advance.
We contract.
And it hurts creativity at a brewery the size of mine, because
you have to plan, I'm going to be brewing this in 2 years.
I don't even know if I'm going to like the hop. So what am I supposed to do? Contract for an 11-pound box? And then if I like it, wait 2 more years before I can get a sizable quantity?
Yeah.
That's, 7 years ago, I would just look at the hop sheet, call them up, and order whatever I wanted and whatever quantity I wanted.
What you can do, too, is you can, if you have friends in the hop industry, you can get samples.
Right.
If you have, good contacts, you can get samples. For instance, ADH, whatever it was.
483.
483.
That was nice hop.
Which turned into a Zaka. That was, you can get small samples to play with and learn the characteristics of the hops before they come out.
They don't even have a name yet. They have a number.
They have a number.
So is the hop shortage, let me put this in perspective here. Is the hop shortage symptomatic of a craft brewing industry that has exploded, or is it some sort of crop failure we're dealing with here?
Oh, no. No crop failure.
Well, no, it's a combination of the two. There was
There have been
every
a couple,
couple
of bad
years. There
years.
Are warehouse fires, and yeah. these apparently there are only like a couple of warehouses that hold all the hops in the country. And so when one
and they
burns
burn
down,
periodically, what's up
well,
with that?
Well, what happens is that the hops are compressed into bales. And it could get very hot inside the bale,
especially if they're not dried properly.
If they're not dried properly, right. if you can get spontaneous combustion, and that's typically how these fires right. start.
It's like right. throwing a bunch of rags in a corner. You know, they can
gasoline soaked rags.
Yeah.
Boom. And
but there's the acreage that's planted is about stable. And actually more stuff coming online in New York and Virginia, for crying out loud, was crowing about 25 acres of hops that you had planted. So we've got a lot of hops being planted in New York
but
State.
Are they good hops?
Jury is still
New
out.
York used to be the hop capital of the United States. It provided like 85% of the hops.
And what century was this?
1800s.
Okay, the 1800s.
But
and how was the beer in the 1800s?
Nobody knows.
Nope. Yeah.
Right? Well, we've got
you know, I'm remembering that it was okay.
You know what? All right. All right, smart guy. We're going to take a break. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined by George DePiro, Roger Savoy, and Paul Mackerlane. It's a food Friday, sort of. It's a beer Friday, and that's okay.
Support for WMC comes from Spirit House Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Ackerman's Appliance, Hudson, for 37 years, a locally owned dealer of appliance brands such as Sub-Zero, Wolf, Blue Star, Bosch, and more. Showroom on Warren Street, ackermansappliance.net. Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs, cafecapriccio.com for reservations. And Springbrook, Oneonta, New York, supporting people of all ages with developmental disabilities, working in schools and homes and in communities across New York to help individuals achieve independence. Springbrookny.org.
Hey, it's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Beer show today on a Food Friday. George DePiro, Roger Savoy, Paul Mackerlane, and yours truly, Ray Graff. Number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Roger, you poured something here. What am I about to drink?
This is cider. I didn't have any Oktoberfest ready, although I brought in the ingredients to make some. We had some cider, which is also a fall beer, fall beverage.
Brew,
you know?
If you will.
And very popular nowadays. I was reading that there's now 60-something cideries in New York State, a significant number of those in the Hudson-Mohawk region near us. So,
yeah. What type of cider is this?
This is Dominic made it at works at our Rensselaer store, and there's champagne yeast and a little bit of extra sugar in there. It's about 8% alcohol.
So it's pretty strong. It's not that sweet.
It's a little bit. No, this is bone dry. There's no sweetness to it. If we wanted to sweeten it, we'd have to back sweeten it. And a lot of people do it. That would help bring out the apple flavor.
How do you keep it from being a bottle bomb when you add sugar to finished cider?
Yeah, literally exploding a bottle?
Yeah.
That's what you mean?
Well, because the yeast will eat that sugar.
Yeah.
And
right,
make carbon dioxide gas.
Sure. Well, actually, this one we have it in a keg. But normally what you would do is you'd add metabisulfite and sorbate. And then you can sweeten it with anything you want, honey or sugar or cider.
Okay, yeah. Well, we're going to try an apple beer here in a minute, but let's go to the phones. Christopher in New Paltz. Christopher.
Hey, I was curious what your thoughts are on alternatives to hops as the flavoring and bittering agents in beer. I mean, in the scope of beer history, hops being used exclusively is really a pretty brief phenomena that's carried up to the present day. There used to be a rich tradition of what they call gruet beers, which made use of a number of botanicals. Certainly, there's lots of things that grow better in New York, for example, than hops. And rather than try to push these hops, which are really disease-prone and really, really prone to fail in the humid environments like we have in the Northeast, why aren't
not
we pushing
true.
Things that
not
are...
Not true. Hang on. Let's disabuse you of that.
No. There's plenty of hops. Hops grew in the Northeast for
yeah, but Roger, when the blight wiped them out at the turn of the 20th century and the farmers took up and went out west,
that was also
they doubled their yields.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Christopher, back to you. I'm sorry.
Basically, I'm just curious why with all the experimentation that's happened in beer over the past decade or more, why we're still slaves to the hop. Why can't we move on to other kinds of flavoring agents?
Bingo. It tastes delicious.
So good.
Aside from bitterness, there's flavor and aroma that you can get from hops that are hugely variable. There's all sorts of flavors
there's
you create.
There's apricots and melon.
There's
and,
tropical. And, there's yeah. you know, there's a
They've
there's
been breeding this for, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's... The things that were used for bitter beer previously were pretty much, you know, just bitter.
Just bitter.
Things like, you know, stinging nettles and
wormwood.
They made beer with wormwood?
Absolutely.
Awesome. If you'd been to, say, Brewery Omegang for Belgian Comes to Cooperstown, you could have found any number of saisons with various herbs and spices in there. I brought one that had coriander and lemon balm in it. Mm-hmm. I've seen on the shelves in beer stores, Stone has one that's, I think it was Stone or Dogfish Head. It had parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme in it. Obviously, this was...
Well, how clever.
Yes, right, exactly.
Yes.
Garfunkel there. But,
right.
But there is any number of beers that you can find out there that have all sorts of things that were used in the past.
But so hops are just, they're around because they work. Right?
Yeah, they're really pleasant. They work well in beer. But as Roger was just saying, the Goza that I served first today, that's got coriander in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
very
it's common. Got hops in it because legally in the United States to call it beer, you have to have some vanishingly small amount of hops in it. But
right.
the hops are so low in that beer, you really can't taste them.
It still tastes like beer.
Right. It's the coriander that's giving it that lemony note.
Your wits.
And the beer I just poured, an apple beer, is spiced with a very low amount of hops, but with cinnamon and ginger.
So British beers,
this pumpkin beer probably has cinnamon and nutmeg, or you know,
I may be totally wrong, but British beer very high in malt and not so high in hops,
correct?
Right?
In general,
well,
but it's
higher than a lot
higher than
a lot
Germans,
of, higher yeah. higher than Germans, higher than a lot of the European beers,
and changing.
Just to get back to the interesting bittering
characteristics of
herbs and spices and things. There's a brewery I encountered at Great American Beer Festival called it's Scratch Brewing Company.
Yeah.
I have no idea where they are. They were making only gruets.
Okay, what's a gruet now?
It's something that doesn't – it's a basically a beer without hops.
Spiced with
but
other
spiced
things.
With other things.
Still malt.
They use mushrooms. They use woods. They use all sorts of different things. They grow all their own herbs.
Yep.
So I would say Google them, Scratch Brewing Company.
Was it good?
And you'll find – yes, they were delicious. And you'll find if they've got a website, they grow all their own stuff or they find it. In the woods.
On the side of the road. Roadkill stouts.
But there should be an assortment of different bittering things listed on their site that would help you.
I've got about 40 different kinds of herbs and spices at my store that people use for various stuff.
All right. So. Ann in Albany, turn your radio down just a tad, okay?
Okay.
You're on.
Steadfast.
I have a question. I am not a beer drinker. Understood the... Don't
why
appreciate
not?
It.
So
my
sad.
Sister is. I know. I don't know why, but the stuff doesn't appeal.
Right.
But my sister is, and she's recently diagnosed as to avoid gluten products, and asked me. She said, "I heard there's a beer in Albany, or made in or near or around Albany, is available to people who are gluten free restricted." So
it's actually very good.
It's called
are her options.
Yeah, it's Steadfast Brewing Company. And they're using, I think, sorghum bait for their base.
Most of this stuff.
There are a bunch of new beers on the market that are made from barley and barley malt that are also categorized as gluten-free. And I think you have to be below 20 milligrams per liter of gluten.
How does it taste?
Yeah, and these beers are made with an enzyme called Clarity Firm that breaks down specifically proline. And it was designed to make clear beer, and to prevent shell haze. But it also attacks attacks gluten and breaks it down.
Does so it there's taste a like beer? Beer.
It does.
Yeah. Ones made with barley that are treated with the enzyme taste a lot like regular beer. Yeah.
And of the gluten free ones I've had, Steadfast was one of the better ones.
Okay. So yeah, and there's Widmer makes a bunch of them called Omission. Yeah.
And the Clarity Firm stuff is available if you're a home brewer. A lot of people use it for just that reason.
Okay. And people have different sensitivities too. Exactly. So if you're not terrifically sensitive, just using Clarity Firm in your home brew.
But if you have celiac, it may still be an issue.
Right. Yeah.
It might be.
You should probably avoid.
And thanks a lot for the call. Bye. 1-800-348-2551. All right. While we were listening to Ann and answering that question, George, we drank one of yours. This is an apple beer.
An apple beer. And it's got one of my better names. It's called Apple Beer.
Wow.
And,
how did you ever come up with that?
Sometimes these... The vision just
the neurons
happens.
Just flash
and things click.
Who's heading up your marketing department? I
wonder. Not me.
Uh-huh.
And but this is made with apple cider that I got from Indian Ladder Farm, and I add it to the finished beer, to the young beer after fermentation, so the cider's not getting heated. I found that in my earlier batches of this many years ago, if you cook the cider in the boil, gives you a stewed apple flavor that I don't find pleasing.
Yeah, I can see
this gives you a brighter fruit character. And so I add it to the beer like that. And it's spiced with cinnamon and ginger.
It's good.
So very light.
But in a subtle way. I like subtle with the spices.
That's a good plan. All right, here's one from email. This is from Jamie. Have you tried beers from the Shiner Brewery in Texas? It's a recent discovery for me. So I don't know how long it's been around, but the low price and variety make me believe it's new to us. Well, I think it's new to around, the last few years around here. I highly recommend all their styles. Very German.
Shiner Bock.
Yeah,
except it's not a Bock.
I didn't really like the Shiner. I got to say, I was hoping for the best, and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's not a Bock, you say.
Texas has... Is it Texas law? I think it's Texas law. They've got this weird thing down there where if the beer is over a certain percentage of alcohol, they have to call it a Bock, even though a brewer wouldn't call it a Bock.
No, it didn't taste like a Bock to me.
Bock is a specific German lager style.
And I was looking
that's one of those alcohol number.
Right. And when I bought it, I said, okay, I got a Bock beer here. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And that's an example of the regulators not understanding what they're regulating.
Right.
And demanding that terms be used that historically... are not appropriate.
We are, thank God, moving away from that, and it's getting less and less prevalent. But
it is getting.
It used to be widespread.
There was just some, loosening of the TTB rules on reporting and stuff for small breweries. So it's always nice to see.
I saw that Shiner has an Oktoberfest, which I have not had. Has anybody had that?
I would hope that that's actually an Oktoberfest.
Yeah,
had it.
All right, note to self: try that.
But even Oktoberfest is another style that. It's changed over the years. In Germany, if you go to the Big Tent, it's nowadays a blonde beer that's only slightly higher in alcohol than your average Munich Helles.
And that's what they call Oktoberfest.
What I think of as an Oktoberfest is now called Märzenbier, which means March beer.
Like a spot in Oktoberfest or a Hackershore.
Right. Well, if you carefully read
Saratoga Lager.
The spot in Oktoberfest label says Märzen.
Yes, it does.
Because that means original Märzen beer. That's what they...
And it's so good. I have not been able to find any this season, any of the spots. All right, let's go back to the phones. June in Woodstock. June.
Hi, I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for local breweries. I'm in town for the Woodstock Film Festival, and I'm wondering if there's anything other than your own, some local breweries that the experts would suggest.
Okay.
I know all the little guys around here.
All right, Roger.
Address that. So there's a whole host of new micros and farm breweries that are in our area. It's like an explosion of breweries. It's wonderful. Of course, there's George, and you know, and he's a great brewer, and you should try his beer if you haven't. But for example, we have Honey Hollow Brewery in Earlton. There's the Beer Diviner in Steventown. There's S&S Brewery in Nassau. They're not quite open yet, but there's Green Wolf in Middleburg.
Well, that won't help.
That won't help.
But they'll be open very soon.
All right. Well, stick around then, Jude.
There's Gray Wolf in.
If you're down in the Kingston area, Woodstock, you know, there's.
Athens has
Crossroads.
Right. Crossroads Brewing is very good.
Great.
Keegan Ailes,
right in Kingston.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, well, they've been there a long time. That's nothing new.
But still good.
Yeah. If you would, can I give you my email? Yeah.
Send
me an email at roger@beerbrew.com. I'll send you a list of the little breweries that are within, say, 25 miles of Albany.
There you go, June. Well, enjoy the film fest.
Thanks,
bye. 1-800-348-2551. All right, here's one from email. This is from Kay. Recently, we found hops growing on our property in Fort Ann, New York.
Of course you did.
Everybody does.
We have never planted any, nor do we have any reason to think the previous owners did. Could they be wild hops? We are under the impression that these are extremely rare.
They're probably hops left over from the 1800s.
You're kidding me.
They're probably cluster or closely related to cluster.
Right. Yep.
Which is an old hop variety.
Which isn't all that pleasant, actually.
But could you still, if you wanted if you wanted to brew with it, I'd sell it.
I would just
use it for bittering and use something else.
There are hops. There are hops growing in downtown Albany at the corner of J and Dove Street.
You're kidding me.
Where a brewery used to be. They probably planted them as ornaments.
Sure.
They are still there every year. Like middle of the summer, the worst time to do it, they cut them down to the ground and they come back anyway.
Well, George, you got to try it.
What I need, and I can do this now because I'm moving. I bought a new house where I'm going to have a yard.
Yeah.
And
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm going to take a cutting next spring and grow them, and then I can do it because they never leave enough of them up to get significant flowers.
Right.
There's enough that I can show my children.
Yeah.
These are hops. Daddy makes beer out of these, but there's not enough to use, even for a home brewer.
I find this fascinating. So if you see hops, for instance, Kay was in Fort Ann. You're seeing a remnant of an earlier time.
Of an earlier farm, right.
Exactly. You can practically hear
the drums and fifes.
Well, smell the smoke on the air in the summer, in the fall when they're harvesting at 40 cents a box.
People used to travel by train from New York City to come up here and participate in the hop harvest.
Yeah.
And cut the hops down,
Boston,
pick them.
I mean, all over the Northeast people.
It was a huge industry here. New York State used to be the largest supplier of hops in the world.
Sure. Well, millions of pounds.
If the hops still come up in downtown Albany after all these years, I mean, there have been breweries down there since the 1600s, then I would say that they could probably be grown fairly easily.
They can. But it's also a matter of quality also and economics. Well, can they be grown as efficiently as they can in other places? You don't try to grow bananas in New York.
No.
I mean, you could do it. You could.
But bananas don't spring. You don't say, I'm in Fort Ann. Right. I have bananas on my property.
But as you noted, there's a lot more disease-resistant strains available now.
Right.
And there's an economic incentive to plant them now because of the new farm brewery law, you know. And there is
what is the new farm brewery law?
You have to use a certain amount of New York State ingredients in your beer.
I think it's 20%,
but it's going up to 80.
It's kind of confusing because
they don't know what they're doing.
Right. Well, malt is the most abundant ingredient in beer aside from water, but water doesn't count in this calculation, and you could never use enough hops to get even to 20% of the weight
of
the beer.
So you'd have to use malt
it's not wheat, but
it's a strange calculation, and I'm told that if the brewer makes a good effort to get the local ingredients, that's good enough, because you couldn't actually use all local ingredients.
You don't have to. It's 20%. You can get, at this point, you can get 20% of your New York State grains and hops without much of a problem.
Are there tax breaks involved?
I couldn't.
Sure. Is this something a brewer should be?
Yes,
in other words,
there are.
You run Druthers, which is a commercial brewery.
I can get you a pallet of New York State grown hops.
Hops, yes.
No, a pallet. I can get you a pallet of a New York State Turo by Monday if you wanted to.
Right, except I use a lot of Munich malt.
Well, yeah, but you're not a farm brewer, and you don't have to use
right.
it.
Starting to sound like Big Lebowski. You want a toe? I'll get you a toe.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. Yeah.
All right, no. So the bottom line, and we're out of time here just for a moment. If you decided, hey, I want to make a reasonable effort to do this, would there be tax breaks for Druthers?
You'd have to change your...
I'd have to change my license.
And
you get to sell at farm markets and things like that.
You can have your own five tasting rooms.
All right, well, you know what? This has been an interesting program and good beer. And thank you, George DePiro, Roger Savoy, and Paul McErlane. We appreciate everybody who called in. And don't forget, this audio will be online. WAM, you all right?
I'm okay.
All right, don't inhale the hops.
WAMC.org.
All right, we're done. Have a great weekend, everybody. Support comes from Hudson Valley Fresh Dairy, a partnership of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farms, providing fresh local milk, cream, sour cream, and yogurt to our neighbors, HudsonValleyFresh.com. Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art, Facebook or VisionXLEyeCare.com. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, NBTBank.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks once again to George DePiro, Roger Savoy, and Paul McErlane. All right, a long week. We had a fun drive. It ended on Monday. It's time to rest.